listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 153 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me for this roundtable discussion is the one and only Chris Robley. Chris, how you doing?
I'm good. I've been busy. Had a couple gigs this week, and what else? I'm about to go on vacation next week, so I'm, you know how it is. You cram a lot for work to get all your work done, because you can't really ever go on vacation. So
I know.
I'm just doing next week's work this week. So
I know that's. I've noticed that. I'm like, when I take days off, but all I do is just work 40 hours in 4 days or 45 hours in 4 days so I can have Friday off, which is what my plan was for today, and I'm still working. So
yep, here we are.
Here we are. Because I was like, Chris is going on vacation. We got to get a new podcast up that talks about the conference and all the cool things coming up, and there's just some great news. So we had to talk.
So basically, my vacation means you can't go on vacation either.
That's true.
How this is playing out.
I know. I know. This is the life we lead. This is the life we lead. But I'm happy to be here talking to you, Chris, because there's lots of cool things going on. We're going to talk about the DIY Musician Conference. We're going to give a bit of a conference preview later in the episode. We have some great news items. And there's some great listener feedback and questions. So it's going to be a good episode and lots to talk about. But before we get into that, I wanted to tell everybody that, you know, we do a podcast and, I am a big podcast fan. That's why I started doing podcasts. And, I've discovered a podcast recently that I think everyone should be listening to after they listen to our podcast, of course. But it's called the Song Exploder Podcast. Have you heard this podcast before, Chris?
Oh, yeah. So they take a song each episode, right, and dive into it?
Yeah, well, it's the artists talk about the creation process.
That's right, yeah.
And it's really good. I've been binge listening it, and I think there's like 40-some episodes. They sort of popped up on everybody's radar a few months back when U2 did an episode. Most of the episodes had been featuring, you know, independent artists or lower level signed artists. But you know, I actually reached out to the guy who does the podcast and found out that U2 actually heard the podcast and wanted to be on it. That's how the legend goes. So it's, you could tell that artists are really gravitating towards it, and really it's cool because basically they take a song. And they talk about the creation process of it, and you hear stems. And that's why I think the U2 one was such a hit, because it's very rare that, you hear U2 talking about the creation process. And two, you actually hear a lot of stems and a lot of pieces of how the song came together, and it's very cool. But the reason why I think every artist should listen to it is because one of the main questions we get, Chris, and the one thing that we talk about all the time on the podcast is you got to learn how to tell your story. And we get a lot of feedback when we say that people don't understand what that means or have they struggle with it. And I think this is one. There's a lot of artists telling stories about how an album came together. Some, you know, some of the podcasts spend a lot of time talking more about the procedures, the kind of like, I came up with this beat and then we layered this guitar on top. And I think it's really cool, you know, like the, how it came together. But there was this one episode with, the Long Winters. Are you familiar with that band?
Yeah. Yeah. What's his name? John Roderick. Is that the guy?
I believe so. They're out of Seattle. But there's this one episode with him where he, I think, perfectly encapsulated how to tell your story in a way that's compelling and brings it into the music. And it really wasn't, you know, this big biography. And it was a very powerful episode and brought so much more meaning to the song. The song they talk about is called The Captain Thinks Aloud, I believe is the name of the title. Anyway,
check that one out.
It was just such a perfect way of telling a story. I think everyone should listen to it who struggled with telling their story, because when I was like, man, that was amazing. The way
he's a very, very eloquent guy just as it is. So I can imagine that, talking, hearing him in interviews and stuff, he's well spoken. Did you know that our friend Mike Squires used to play guitar for them?
Yes. I knew that was the band that he had played with. I was like, I'm pretty sure Mike played for these guys, but former CD Baby employee.
There's a little documentary on YouTube of them recording an album, and that's when he was in the studio with them.
All right. Well, as I mentioned at the top, there's lots of great music business news. Actually, very dramatic. A lot of drama going on. So. So let's get into some news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
Well, Apple Music said it has a bit of homework to do to improve its Apple Music streaming service. Apple Music launched in June as a rival to Spotify, and while it has been praised for its curated playlist, it has been criticized over its user interface and bugs affecting people's existing iTunes libraries. Oliver Schuster, VP of iTunes International, said, "There's a lot of work going into making the product better. Our focus is on editorial and playlist, and obviously we have teams all around the world working on that, but we're also adding features and cleaning up certain things." Apple is launching a new advertising campaign to promote Apple Music and attract more trial members, with the company's annual September Music Festival in London, renamed the Apple Music Festival, also playing a key role. On to some SoundCloud news. There's some good news and bad news for SoundCloud. On the good news side, there are rumors that SoundCloud is on the verge of confirming a major licensing deal with Universal Music Group. The agreement comes after months of intense negotiation talks between the two parties, and it appears that Universal has ended up in a position of strength. This might help explain why SoundCloud went on a recent stringent takedown and suspension spree. The service removed a spat of copyright-infringing users and mixes off its service, but some legitimate rights holders, such as indie label Lojinx and DJ Plasticine, were hit as collateral damage and weren't happy about it. SoundCloud launched its On SoundCloud program last year, which finally gave labels the opportunity to accrue advertising revenue from plays. In March this year, SoundCloud announced that On SoundCloud was paying about $166,000 per month to rights holders. SoundCloud still has a long way to go, though. On the bad news side, UK-based collection society PRS for Music confirmed that it had filed legal action against SoundCloud for refusal to pay performance royalties. After careful consideration and following 5 years of unsuccessful negotiations, we now find ourselves in a situation where we have no alternative but to commence legal proceedings, the organization confirmed. The exact nature of the complaint remains forthcoming, though it's likely focused on non-payment of publishing performance royalties, with mechanical licenses potentially also included. Those details are actually spread across a few different organizations in the U.S., all of whom could potentially strike next. And of course, we have Spotify news. Recently, Spotify quietly updated its terms and conditions to grant itself sweeping abilities to track every location, movement, and online activity of its users, even when those users weren't using Spotify. That data, including information pulled from friends' profiles, would then be transmitted to advertising partners. When the new terms were made public, Spotify CEO Daniel Ek backpedaled on those terms and promised an entirely new set of terms of conditions to be updated soon, if not already updated by the time you hear this. He also pointed to the ability for users to opt out of certain data collection activities, a claim that contradicts language in the recently updated terms. Well, we're going to finish on some happy news, Chris. Warner Music Group says they own the copyright to Happy Birthday, a song whose value has been estimated at roughly $5 million. That copyright claim is one of the reasons why you rarely hear Happy Birthday sung in a movie or television show. and why Warner is being actively litigated against for unfairly claiming ownership of a song in the public domain. Now that battle is about to get a lot more complicated. Deep in the vaults of the University of Louisville, a librarian has now discovered what appears to be the original manuscript of Happy Birthday, or at least the earliest known version. The sheet music dates back to the 1890s and is for a song song originally titled Good Morning to All, which eventually morphed into the song Happy Birthday. So that is the happy news, that Happy Birthday may be getting freed.
It might actually be in the public domain.
Yes. Yes.
Wow. I heard a NPR story a week or two ago about this very topic, although they didn't mention that last part of it. It was just about Happy Birthday and how, like, you know, TGI Fridays and all these restaurants have their own versions of birthday songs because they don't want to have to pay the licensing to who owns it? Universal?
Warner Brothers.
Or Warner. Okay. And then whoever was the host of the show, I think it was on Morning Edition or something, started singing Happy Birthday at the end of the episode. and then he did a little plug into the mic. He was like, my lawyer says it's fair use.
That's funny. Well, this just happened this week that they found that. So, I would say Warner's claim on that might be officially going away soon. It's going to be tougher for them to claim that they own it. You know, for those of you that may or may not know, the anything previous to the, what is it, 1927, Chris? Is that the?
I think it was 23.
23. One, it's in the 20s. We'll say 23. Anything before that is public domain, pretty much no questions asked. So if it dates back before then they will lose their copyright claim and probably open themselves up for countersuits for all the people that they've beaten down.
Totally.
So
All the films, that was one of the things the NPR story talked about. Anytime that song appears in a film, they're charging sometimes as much as $100,000 to license the use of that song.
Yeah, and that's why all your restaurants, the waiters and waitresses barely ever sing Happy Birthday, which, you know, the stuff that they come up with is usually a little more energetic anyway. It's always funny when I'm someplace and there's people that don't typically singing Happy Birthday in all different keys in a very unenthusiastic way. It just sounds more like a funeral march.
Yeah, it's kind of like a dirge.
Yeah. So, Apple Music, you know, we did our Apple Music preview the last episode of the podcast. You know, they came out saying they have 11 million users, lots of people picking apart those numbers. Clearly, they've signaled that they know that the product is not perfect, which I was never expecting them to launch a perfect product, but... You still hanging in there with Apple Music? On the last podcast, you said you loved it.
Oh, yeah. I still listen to it all the time. And I've actually been really getting into those playlists that they, you know, they've got plenty of playlists, but then they recommend them specifically towards your own taste. So they've been doing a good job.
Yeah, we need to probably get, I don't know if it'd be worth a whole episode of the podcast, but definitely some articles on the DIY Musician blog about playlisting, because that's become a big thing. One of our recent CD Baby Pro success stories that we've been talking to and working on was a guy that he does ambient electronic music, and somebody put it in a random playlist, and that playlist gets tons of listens. And with streaming revenue, or with streaming music, there's publishing money that's also generated and becoming more important for people to sign up for a service like CD Baby Pro to collect that publishing money, because it's starting to become a sizable chunk. And we actually have some details about that in some of the listener questions coming up later in the podcast.
Cool.
But I'm loving the playlist as well with Apple Music. I can't remember if we had this conversation on the podcast last time, but I realized how much I hate MP3s. As a format, the CD was so much better than the MP3. And then streaming music, I'm like, you know what? This is so much easier. I'm tired of trying to find MP3s in folders, them getting moved around, deleted, renamed. I can't believe I've come to the point where I'm like realizing that in the history of music, the MP3 will be looked upon as, you know, not that great of a format, in my opinion.
It's the 8-track of the digital world.
Yes.
So another thing I really love about Apple Music is that, particularly having, you know, a 3-year-old that I'm driving around, she'll be in the back seat and say, like, I want to hear whatever. And, you know, assuming I'm not in the middle of listening to something I want to hear, then I can just pick up my phone and talk to Siri. I don't have to, like, you know, dangerously be typing on my phone. And while I'm driving, I can just say, hey, Siri, play. She'd be coming around the mountain when she comes. And something comes up on Apple Music, and it's great.
All right. Well, I don't think we need to talk about Spotify at all. We can get into some other things. That news item of them stealing everybody's data, I just, at this point in the digital world, I'm expecting that everybody's stealing my data. So, but people are upset about that. Let's get into the main discussion piece today. Chris, we're throwing a conference. Have you heard about this? The DIY Musician Conference.
Wait, am I supposed to be there?
I booked you a ticket. Did you put it on your calendar?
Yeah. You know, actually, now that you say that, when we decided to do it, to be very honest, I thought we were biting off more than we can chew and that it was too soon. We didn't have enough planning time. And I'm, like, super excited that everyone in our team has proven me wrong. Like,
Chris,
I think it's going to be great.
How dare you ever doubt me again?
I honestly thought, wait, October of 2015, we should be doing this in 2016.
I would agree with that assessment. And we will be doing it in 2016, apparently.
We should postpone it.
Yeah.
Well, not anymore.
The next time you see me, you'll probably notice, man, Kevin's starting, his hair's a lot thinner.
It's like the presidency.
And some gray's coming in pretty fast. Yeah, it is, that's, you know, been a major project on my plate, and someone else here at CD Baby named Danielle, who works in the marketing department, we've been working on, and Dimitri, our publicist. It's been a lot of work, but it's been a joy to bring this. And Chris, you've been pitching in too. You've been doing a lot of work for it too, as well, with a lot of copywriting and articles and such. And it's been a lot of work, but it's been a joy to bring this together and seeing it come together. So we wanted to give you a preview of the conference, why we're doing it, what the point is, why we chose Chicago, what's going to happen there. And so you know what to expect and that you can get a ticket. It's looking like it's going to sell out, which has been no easy feat. But I think it's going to be well worth you checking out in making the journey to Chicago. But first up, I want to mention we have three amazing sponsors that stepped up big time to help us pull this off. One is Gig Salad. And they help you find the kind of gigs that's like, they call them like alternative gigs, corporate stuff, weddings, things that get you paid well. And a lot of artists are having a lot of success making money, getting the gigs that, you know, it's not the Friday night headlining show, but it's the ones that help you pay the bills, buy gear, and keep your career moving forward. And so
I think I maybe on the last episode I gave them a plug, but I signed up to test it out, and you know, within a week or so I'd had an offer to play a song at a wedding, and you know, it was probably a 3.5-minute song, and they were going to pay me hundreds and hundreds of dollars just to show up. And she said, you just show up, play the song, and you can leave. You don't need to stick around and do anything else. So for 5 minutes of work.
Yeah, so it's stuff
that type of thing.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you weren't able to take the gig because you were flying back to Portland, Oregon. So yeah, so they do that. Check them out. I've been hearing more and more artists saying, "Hey, this is huge. This has been a huge way for me to really make music my full time thing." So gigsalad.com. They'll be at the conference. Also, Berklee Online. They're doing something really cool at the conference. You know, they have their online school that you can learn about, you know, music business. You can learn about production and all sorts of different things and get certificates, you know, so it proves that you have a real education. They are going to be there doing Berklee Online Live, and they're going to be doing three different sessions, and it's going to be a, you know, sort of a special format that is branded for them. And then we have Rumblefish, who powers our sync licensing program, and they've been doing some awesome things behind the scenes as far as getting artist placements and making money in all sorts of different micro sync scenarios, but even getting some big TV show placements lately for our artists. So they're going to be there, and they're going to be hosting, they're going to be on a panel that I'm on, and they're going to be hosting a panel about YouTube and how to monetize and improve what you're getting out of YouTube. So all those sponsors stepped up big time. And I should say, all the music that you're hearing in this episode of the podcast, we got from Rumblefish, where, you know, if you're a podcaster or somebody who needs music on the web, it's an excellent resource. Go there. I highly recommend it. And Chris, what theme of should we go for the music this time? Try and give me something a little easier to search than the last episode where it took me a while.
How about just like totally in your face rock music?
Okay, in your face rock. That's easy. So yeah, all that music you're hearing today was licensed through Rumblefish for the use in this podcast. It's a great resource. But all those three sponsors, check them out. They really stepped up big, because the one thing we wanted to do with this conference, more than anything, was make it affordable. With CD Baby, both Chris and myself travel and go to conferences, and a lot of times they are $400, $500, sometimes over $1,000 to attend. And
I was thinking that, like, you know, some conferences are great, some are terrible, but the one thing they all have in common is being super expensive.
Yes. So. And there's nothing worse than going to a super expensive conference and feeling like you got nothing out of it. So step one for us was like, we want to make it affordable. We launched it with a $49 price point. Hope you got in on that price point. If not, it's $79 right now. It will be going up in the middle of September, on September 16th. That'll go up to $99. So if you haven't got your tickets yet, do so. So we wanted to keep it affordable. And then the other thing we wanted to do was make sure that it addressed the needs of independent artists, and you walked away with actionable advice. I don't know about you, Chris, but I've gone to some conferences, and just recently I went to a conference that will remain nameless, and I got up and left, I think, three or four different panels, because what they talked about had nothing to do with the title of it, or they just rambled and never got to any meat of the discussion. There was one where there was this guy that was kind of a wise guy, and he just thought he was the funniest guy, and he just kept derailing everything. And just like, I cannot stand this guy's personality. And like, we're starting to talk about.
I think that's really common. Like, I'm thinking of plenty of panels I've watched where the egos of the speakers become more important than the content they're supposed to be sharing with the people sitting in front of them. And so it becomes like, who do you know? How much little bits of trivia do you know about this really obscure aspect of, you know, the music industry that no one cares about? It gets really frustrating. You're like, dude, just tell me something I can use.
Yeah. And so we want to make sure it's actionable. Most of the presentations were intentionally designed to be more workshop oriented, where there's just one speaker talking about a specific thing. We're vetting them all. We're making sure they tell us, you know, and we're saying, what are you going to talk about? We want to know. We want some bullet points. We want to know the actionable advice artists are walking away with. This isn't just a bunch of people randomly showing up and presenting. So you will walk away with some good advice. In fact, we just released the schedule, I think, last week, and I'm a little frustrated that I have to work this thing. I wish I could go to more of the panels.
But, I know. I thought about that too, because just I would love to go to all of them and be able to, you know, just take it in for writing blog content in the future. But The good thing is we are videoing it, so.
Yes. Right? Yeah. We are going to be. That's the plan. Some of the details we're still working out and how to pull that off. But yeah, if you don't make it, we are planning to video everything and give you access to it for a nominal fee. But we're trying to keep it actionable. And we chose Chicago. When we were looking at cities that we could do a conference at. You know, LA has everything under the sun happening there, and we didn't want to go and compete with someone else's conference. We wanted to play nice and not show up and go, don't go to their event, come to our event. So we wanted to find a time where there wasn't anything going on, and also a city that doesn't get serviced by these events all that often, and that we had a short list, and we landed on Chicago. It's the third largest city in the United States. And not only is it massive, but there's a lot of large cities within driving distance. So we knew that a lot of artists would be able to make it without having to buy plane tickets. And so we chose Chicago, a great blues town. And that's where we're going to be, at the Congress Plaza Hotel in downtown Chicago, October 23rd through 24th. And
through 25th.
Yes, 25th. Sorry. Sorry.
23rd to 25th.
Yes. Yes. By the 25th, I will probably have not slept for 4 days straight, and I might be a bit of a zombie, but I'll be running on pure adrenaline at that point.
Stock up on energy drinks.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what's happening. Chris, any highlights that from the schedule that you're looking at that you want to mention? I've got a few of my own, but what's caught your eye so far that they should know about?
I think the thing I'm most excited for, besides, of course, your and my session, which is going to be a live taping of the podcast.
That's right.
But no, I think the thing I'm most excited for is actually something I kind of know what to expect in a way, but it's a Tom Jackson live band makeover. So there's going to be a band on stage, and he's going to sort of workshop their performance in front of an audience. And I think he's going to touch on four different aspects of giving a great live performance. But I've watched his videos, you know, we've had him on the podcast before. There's elements, I think, of his thing that makes every artist uncomfortable, because he's asking you to step out of your comfort zone. But when I've watched, like, even if it's a new age band, I've learned something, or even if it's a hip hop act or a, you know, bluegrass Americana thing, like he can work with any genre, and I think people will learn something for that they can apply to their own music, which I think is really cool. So
yeah,
I'm just excited to see it in person.
I honestly think that that could be worth the price of admission alone. I went back and found Small Town Poets footage right after we'd worked with Tom Jackson. And it was when we were the opening band on a big national tour, and we had 25 minutes. And it's like, you got to do a lot to make an impact in 25 minutes. Had we not worked with him, we would have just played down our songs and done our best. But he really turned it into a performance, and it really worked. Fast forward a bunch of years, I was at a conference and saw him do the live band makeover. And it was, I think, the second podcast where I interviewed him was right after that had happened. So it might be worth checking that out. It was amazing. The band, when they got up there and started playing, they're pretty good. I wonder what he's going to do to improve that. And it was still mind-blowing how much better they were. Speaking of, we are still actively looking for a band to do that band makeover. He wants a 5-piece band. I think he's looking for a rock band. But if you're interested and you're going to be there, you can hit me up on Twitter. I'm at K Bruner. If you have my email, you can email me. Email the podcast at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com and let us know.
Some brave soul. I think basically what he wants is someone to play one song, right? You play it down from the start, and then he just goes over every aspect of it.
It starts out, you would do a performance without any commentary from him. You just play your song and perform it like you would perform it. And it is, for an artist that steps into that role, you're putting yourself out there. I mean, everyone's going to be standing there or sitting there watching you, and you got to like play it like it's the club that everyone's going nuts at. And then he dissects everything, and then at the end, you kind of put it all together, and it's pretty cool. So yeah, we are looking for somebody to fill that role if you're interested. What else you got on your list there, Chris? That
another one of the kind of informational, educational sessions was the I forget what it's called, but it's basically like a website demolition, or what do they call it? Oh, a banned website explosion. So I think real detailed tips about how to make the most out of your online presence. I'm sure they'll be giving you examples, or maybe even looking at people's websites that are in the audience that want to volunteer. I'm not sure if that's exactly a part of it, but I don't know. Something about that grabbed me. And then the thing I'm really looking forward to also is the open mic, which is going to be at the Bottom Lounge, and it's about 4 or 5 hours of attendees playing their songs. So I think it'll be cool just to see what everyone that's there for the weekend is doing and how they're making music.
Yeah, and the cutoff has already come for people to submit for the open mic. We've got a bunch of artists that put their name in, and we are going to randomly select a bunch of them. And so they'll probably end up being about 20, 25 different people that get a chance to jump up on stage. We're hoping to leave a few open slots where we might randomly pick some people there. And I informed you, Chris, the other day that I'm going to force you to play a song.
Are you going to tell everyone what you're going to force me to play, or?
Well, I might as well. It might as well, because then there'll be some anticipation. Chris's go-to karaoke song is Katy Perry's, what is it called? Teenage Dream.
Yeah, that's the one. Yep.
And I've seen it performed before, karaoke style, it's stunning. But when I told him that he had to play the open mic, he said he could play that song as well.
So I'll do an equally stunning solo acoustic version of that monstrous pop hit.
And I'm looking forward to it. So we will have that slotted in. We might have to slot you in early just in case we get a call for a later. Not really an encore, but a reprisal of the of the song. But yeah, so that should be a fun event. The thing that I look forward to a lot is just hanging out with artists and talking about music and what different artists are doing to see success. And so that event's just going to be a fun time to hang out. People are going to get to play songs. We're going to get to meet each other. And, some of the benefits, the whole reason we started this podcast in the beginning was like, hey, we talk to artists all day at work, and this artist just called in with this cool idea for a promotion tip. And then I wish more artists could hear about it. And I learned something from it. And here's something that I know that other people could learn from. And so I love just talking to artists and hearing what they did to get success, especially when it comes to online marketing and promotion type stuff. So it'll be a fun time. I think there's a couple things I'm looking forward to, Chris, that Martin Adkins, who's based there in Chicago, he speaks a lot at different places. He's going to speak. I've stopped by SAE, which is the school that he teaches at. It's an audio engineering school, but it has a music business program as well. He teaches at their campus in Chicago. I stopped by and we were hanging out, and he was talking about how he does this thing about how to make $100,000 next year from your music. And he just started launching it. We were just, just chatting. He started talking about, I'm like, well, yeah, well, what do you, $100,000, whatever. But, what is it? What are you really going to say? Then he started going through all these just quick things. Well, I talk about this and I talk about that. I'm like, man, these are really good ideas. Just simple things that artists forget that end up costing them money over the course of a year. Like one of it was how he talks about how you should prepare your t-shirts ahead of time. So when someone's standing there waiting to pay you money, you're not fumbling through a giant box of t-shirts looking for the right size while other people just move on. And cause like, never mind, I don't want to buy one. Or, you just some of those things that, just simple execution of how you interact with your fans that cost you money. So that one I think is going to be a highlight. I'm looking forward to that one.
And he's like super entertaining and kind of a wild character, but also, like you say, like got great content. So that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be back out in Chicago on September 15th through the 17th. Yeah, 15th through the 17th. And we're going to do another CD Baby artist meetup over at SAE. So if you're listening to this podcast and you don't get an email about it, hit me up on Twitter or something. The plan is to put together a little DIY t-shirt screening center, and folks who come to that meetup can get their very own freshly screened DIY Musician Conference t-shirt that no one else will have, and they can get it for free. So we're working on that, and we're going to just get artists together and talk about the conference. But Martin will be there, and you'll see if you're in the Chicago area and come out to that, you'll see what a character he is. He's very engaging, and he still is I think the only person that we've ever had to put the expletive marker on our podcast.
I forgot about that. Oh yeah.
But man, it's just going to be a great event. We have so many cool companies coming. We've got people, you know, like our sponsors we mentioned. Sound Exchange is sponsoring the showcase, which is going to be Black Milk. Shannon Curtis, who's been on this podcast, Cro-Moses. And there's one other artist that I know I'm forgetting, and I can't believe it.
And I'm not sure I even knew, because those are the three I was thinking of.
There's four, and I know I'm forgetting somebody. Check the website. But we've got artists speaking on a lot of those artists, like Black Milk, who's this huge, is up and coming hip hop artist. He's got a lot of great things going. He's going to be on a songwriting production workshop, and Shannon is going to be on a panel that also will include Chad Lawson, who is a CD Baby artist. Both of them doing really cool stuff. That one's going to be talking about careers that break the mold. Chad was just featured on CBS Sunday Morning last week. He got all that placement, a lot of cool stuff like that, featured on NPR, and got that big feature on CBS Sunday Morning all by himself. And Monday morning, we were selling CDs and downloads for him like crazy. So lots of good people there that are going to pass on great advice. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, you can. So on the DIY Musician blog, there's a recent post that announces the schedule in full by time, and you can see the speakers on each of them. And then there's also a post that has a list of all the companies and brands and stuff that'll be there. So if you're curious just who's being represented, and I guess I should also say that all these people are going to be accessible. So if you start a conversation after a session, you know, these people are going to be happy to talk and just have conversations.
Yeah, that's one thing that I think is nice about us doing it in Chicago, because we're flying in some of these speakers from other places like Nashville, LA, all points. There's a lot of a local Chicago music business represented on the speakers, but they can't speak and then just take off and go back to their office because their office is in LA. So they're more apt to hang out, be with you, and be accessible. Sure Microphones, that's the last one I should mention. They came in just this week to sponsor the open mic. I thought, how perfect is that to have a microphone company sponsoring the open mic? So it's going to be a great event. Cool companies like Kickstarter is going to be there. Pledge Music, CD Baby, of course. We're going to have all our CD Baby crew there with a separate workshop area to answer more detailed questions about distributing your music and all that. So it's going to be a good event. So get tickets. DIYMusicianCon.com will have all the information for you. And, it's going to be Halloween time. So my plan is, after the conference is over Sunday night, with whoever wants to go find some haunted house to go see. Like the kind you pay for, not like Ghost Hunters. Although apparently the Congress Plaza Hotel we are having this event at is supposed to be one of the most haunted locations in Chicago. I stayed there by myself a couple weeks ago, and it was no big deal. Nothing visited me in the nighttime, but it is supposed to be a haunted location.
Yeah, and now that we're thinking of that, did we mention that we're going to... I did mention it. We're going to be recording an episode of the podcast there.
Yeah, it'll be...
in front of an audience.
We've never done that before. I'm nervous.
We want to involve everyone that's there and hear your stories and whatnot. So if they involve ghost stories, then that's fine. If ghosts have haunted your music career.
I think there's a lot of ghosts that have haunted my music career. What were we talking about? So I hope to see everybody there. I love hanging out with artists. I love being with folks and talking about what we do and how we help artists. And so hope to see you there. We do have some listener calls and feedback to get to and emails. So I want to do that. I know we're running a bit long, but, you know, some of the podcasts I listen to go on for hours and hours, and I manage to still keep listening. So I'm sure someone's still listening. And so we got feedback and calls, and let's get to it. This comes from Tommy. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but he's from Gothenburg, Sweden. Great podcast number 184 with Rob Filomena. Thanks for that. It would be fantastic if CD Baby Pro also applied for Swedes. We hope to get there soon, sometime soon, Tommy. If one compared the size of all the remunerations, let's say a DIY owns all rights and is the only performer in a self-produced album. For example, Spotify online music streaming has generated $1,000 from SoundExchange master rights owner remunerations, and that corresponds to $950 as featured artist and $50, 5% to fund for non-featured artists. Also from SoundExchange. What would be the equivalent in performance royalties, ASCAP, BMI, and mechanical royalties, etc.? And then he also asks, what is your opinion of the recently launched PRO AMRA? That is in Europe, I believe. Well, I sent this question to Rob Filomena, our publishing director of publishing, our in-house publishing expert. He came back with this response. So basically, the main question was, what's the breakdown of royalties for streaming compared to, you know, all the different aspects of it? So Rob said, it's pretty simple, actually. Let's set aside the fact that SoundExchange isn't involved at all. The owner of the sound recording gets paid directly from Spotify for streams. And for simplicity's sake, also assume that these are U.S. streams. The division between mechanical and public performance varies from country to country, and there's no official documentation on what is in each place. If $1,000 was earned in sound recording revenue, there is an additional $200 allotted to publishing. That would get divided $170 mechanical and $30 public performance. To his question about AMRA, they're not new exactly, though they were recently bought by Cobalt and placed front and center in the media because they negotiated a worldwide direct deal with Apple Music for publishing royalties. AMRA members' performance and mechanical royalties will not go through societies. They are very tiny, less than 5,000 members, and as far as Rob, our publishing director, knows, they are not opening up membership to everyone. It will likely just be a vehicle for Cobalt members. But anyway, I thought it was very interesting, the Rob giving a pretty much straight breakdown of publishing or of revenue from streams and how publishing is actually a key piece. And if you don't have a publishing administrator like CD Baby Pro, if you've got $1,000 in sound recording revenue from streaming, there's about another $170 in mechanical royalties that you're not going to get if you don't have a publishing administrator. So I hope that answers the question. The thing with SoundExchange, SoundExchange doesn't collect those at all. SoundExchange is not involved with streaming services. They are with Pandora, which is not a streaming service. They are a internet radio company, and it's different. So SoundExchange collects money from that.
Although sometimes you will hear those kind of online radio plays described as non-interactive streaming. So that's maybe sometimes where the confusion comes from.
Yeah, and in his question, you know, he was basically I think we answered it appropriately. I think he was just confused by Sound Exchange's role. But so, Tommy, I hope that answers your question. Thanks for listening from Sweden. And there are some folks coming from Sweden to the conference. So I'm excited. There's people from all over the world coming to Chicago, including people from Sweden.
I just hosted some people from Sweden here 2 nights ago.
Oh, I saw you went to, what's her name?
Sophia Talvik. Well, I played a show with her, so she stayed here the night before.
Okay, I didn't realize you played the show. I saw you took a picture of her. Yeah, she's great.
They're touring the U.S. in a RV.
Yep, sounds about right. I've got another one. This podcast is just very international. This one comes from Australia. Hi, Kevin and team. My name is Matt from Australia, an Australian rock band, EMPRA. It's all capitals, so I'm not sure if it's EMPRA or if it is the EMPRA. I've recently discovered your amazing podcast, and I've been going back listening to tons of the episodes, getting so much invaluable info and inspiration. So thank you guys so much for your efforts over the years. I really got a kick out of some old school episodes. Ariel Hyatt talking about MySpace strategies was so great. So I know you guys like getting the listener feedback and questions. So one thing my band is currently trying to work out is trying to get kickstarted in an international market. And he just means by launching, not a Kickstarter campaign. We are an independent band residing here in Melbourne. And long story short, we truly feel our sound is best suited for the West Coast of America. We think we are better spending our money and efforts in trying to get started there rather than just going just doing the same old here in Australia to limited success. We are all willing to make the move over there, and we are trying to work out the best way to go about that in terms of visa and jobs, etc. Do you guys have any tips on attracting the right team of people around a release strategy in a market where you can't physically be there building a grassroots following? We are actually coming over to California in October just to try and lay some foundations, meet as many people as we can, and play a couple of low-key gigs. We have one booked at the Viper Room on October 11th with a few more to follow soon. And then he gave me a link to give us an idea of the sound. And anyway, thanks again for the inspiration and motivation with the podcast, and I hope you guys can keep it up. Cheers, Matt.
That's interesting because Sophia Talvik from Sweden is in a similar boat. She comes over here maybe once a year, but for a pretty extended duration. She'll tour for 2 or 3 months, and she's needed to apply for like work stay visas or whatever it's called. And I know she has to get referrals, and so it sounds like it's a good idea they're coming over to do the legwork and get some people that can vouch for them.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that, you know, this trip that you're making in October, I don't know how you went about it or how it's planned. It does get tricky when you start getting paid, and that's where you have to start getting, like a work visa, and it can take time. It could be an upfront fee depending on where you're coming from. It's very interesting, you know, doing some international travel, both for CD Baby and for playing music. In the last 5 years, the visas, the price were all over the map. Some countries didn't care. When I went to Brazil, apparently Brazil and the U.S. have kind of, you know, when it comes to trade, have some issues. And so the work visa, or the visa, it wasn't even a work visa, just a visa to go to the country was like almost $300. Where other countries, it's like $10. It just depends where you're going. So there's all those details you need to work out. I know that I've had an artist who is from the U.S. going to Canada, and he had flyers for a gig, and that triggered a whole bunch more warning signs when getting through customs. So if you're just sort of doing a low-key trip, I would say, you know, that's more of a vacation, but we happen to be playing a gig, that's probably easier, but you will need to look into all those details to make sure you're doing it legally, because when they see bands with promotional flyers and merchandise that they're trying to sell, depending on who you run into, in what country you're going to, that can be problems. I don't think the U.S. is too strict on that kind of stuff, but apparently Canada is just really strict on it.
Oh, yeah. When I went to Folk Alliance a couple years ago when it was in Toronto, I brought my guitar with me, and they hassled me when I was trying to get through. I'm like, I'm here for work, and we're spending money that goes to Canadian businesses to be here. So yeah, eventually they let me through.
I've been to several conferences in Canada where I was speaking, and man, for some reason I just get really intimidated by Border Patrol people. And in coming back from Canada, they were like totally giving me the, you know, the third degree and about what I was doing there and did I get paid. And so when Small Town Poets, we went into Canada and we had to, you know, be prepared to remove everything from the bus for them to go through it. I mean, you would think that we were going into, you know, some of the countries in the Middle East where there's heavy security concerns, but you know, each country can do what they want. But yeah, so I would, as far as marketing and stuff, the one thing I would say is this. One, scour as much data that you can get from online services, whether it be if you have music on Pandora, make sure you're signed up for their AMP account. And that way you can see data, listener data. That doesn't give you contact information, but you can see if there's you're gaining traction in the areas where you're saying you want to be and think that people will like your sound. You might be surprised where people are listening. But I would treat every contact you make in the States like gold. You know, when you're just trying to get a footing, any fan, any contact, you know, be very appreciative. And, you know, just when you're here, I would say if you're wanting to get into the States and you find yourself having lots of time sitting around to play video games, you're doing it wrong. You should be working morning till night, just getting out and meeting people, offer to show up and play acoustic sets, go to a college student center and, you know, you might need permission first, but do an acoustic set, do whatever you can just to get people, get some contacts, get them excited, and then start corresponding with those people differently than you would your normal fans there in Australia. I mean, that would be my advice.
Sounds wise to me. I know if they ended up making that trip and they think it's going well and they really want to come back here on a more, you know, long-term basis, there are lawyers and services you can hire to help you through that whole, you know, visa application process. And then while you're here, I think that they will help you deal with any, you know, if the government comes in at any point and starts questioning the validity of your visa, like they'll help you defend your case and all that. So
yeah, and after your trip talk in October, let us know how it goes. Email us or call or let us know how it went, and we'll share any advice that you have after making the journey, any snags you may have hit. We'd love to hear about it. And I've been looking for some artists to get on the podcast to talk about touring internationally, whether you're from the United States going over to Europe or Australia or Asia or all points around the globe, or if you're from somewhere else trying to come to the U.S. and some advice for artists that are not in the U.S. coming to the U.S. to all the things that they had to do. Or if there's other major countries, you know, there's lots of other, you know, going to the U.K., you know, from various countries can be different or, you know, so very interested in that, because with the internet, it's crazy how you can instantly have an audience in some place you've never been on the other side of the globe. It's a common thing we hear at CD Baby where, you know, they put their music up and they start selling music in Germany or Japan or some random place they've never been before, and just realizing it really is a global economy and you have a global reach, and you might find out that, hey, I'm really popular. I was talking to an artist recently it might have been Germany. He was like, I have no idea why, but for some reason, I'm just really popular in Germany, and I've never even been there before. And so he was making a trip there for the first time and was really excited about it. So it's just, I love hearing those stories.
Well, we have a frequent listener who tours often in France. So he's from there. He lives here now. I don't know if he's a citizen, but anyways, he's going back and forth between those two countries all the time. So he might have advice about...
Yeah, so if you're one of those folks, just email us, call us. We'd love to have you on the podcast to help walk through some of those issues so artists can gain an understanding. I've got a friend that has done two tours in China.
Oh, wow.
They're just like, you know, your indie rock band from... He lives here in Portland, but the band, I think, is based out of California. And I need to have him on there as well and talk about it, because... He didn't book it. It was, the lead singer, and he was just filling in as a drummer. He happened to know these guys, but he said it was quite an experience playing in China. So
you definitely need to do an episode about that. That sounds fascinating.
All right, we have a phone call, so I'm going to play that call right now.
Hey, Kevin, this is Mike from Chicago, and I had a question about how some artists are using Twitter right now. So just as like a regular person on Twitter, I sometimes get followers who I've never heard of or never met, and I know that they're just following me because they're, you know, an artist or a person trying to get me to follow them back or to maybe look at their profile and check out their stuff and maybe buy something. And, I have to say this used to kind of annoy me because I know they're not really interested in me or anything I have to say. They're just kind of trying to sell me something. But then the other day, someone followed me and I went checked out their profile and their band and actually really liked it and ended up buying one of their albums on Bandcamp. So I'm just wondering, is this something you think should artists be just trying to follow as many people as they can, you know, casting a wide net, or is that going to annoy people and backfire? Anyways, enjoy the podcast, and I look forward to hearing your thoughts about this. Thanks.
Well, okay, so I might not have the most, like, social media guru attitude about it, but I think you should be selective about who you follow and try to start with a small, manageable community of people that you're actually going to be interested in what they're sharing and who you think are actually interested in what you're sharing and that you're communicating and replying to each other's stuff and build it from there so that it has that kind of compact energy and then expand outward naturally. Because I feel like the people who do cast that giant net and then it's kind of meaningless. Like, what does that matter that, you know, I don't know. You know what I'm saying. I just think it's a waste of time when you worry about numbers over quality. So, but to answer the question about if someone follows you and you are interested in what they're doing, obviously follow them back. If someone follows you and you're like, I don't know this person, I don't care, I would say wait. And then if they start engaging with your content and they're replying to you and suddenly you feel like they're actually interested in you, then go ahead and follow them back and kind of make it more official.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are some definite etiquette rules in order to have a successful Twitter feed. I think this happened to me recently. An artist followed me, and you know, I have when I'm at work, I have TweetDeck open, and I've got a whole bunch of feeds I'm following related to CD Baby, my own personal stuff related to Small Town Poets, and so I see things all day long. And so I get notifications. I'll see like, oh, these people followed me. I don't just go necessarily and follow them all back. I might look at their description and go, oh, that looks like an interesting person to follow. But if they start engaging, like if they start talking to me, yeah, I absolutely will follow them. But I had somebody popped up and like, hey, they followed you. And like, it was less than a day. They tweeted me and said, you didn't follow me back, so I'm unfollowing you. I'm like, I don't care. I'm like, I didn't even know who you were in the first place.
Yeah, now I'm
and,
really glad.
Yeah, and now you throw a little tantrum at me on Twitter because somebody I had no idea who you were. And if I didn't have that feed open, I would never have known anyway. So I would say that the average person doesn't have TweetDeck open in front of them all day monitoring feeds and notifications because they're probably not doing social media or monitoring marketing stats for a company. So if you're an artist and you treat people that way, you're not going to get fans. That's not how to properly use the platform.
Yeah.
But
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, I've followed and mentioned and, you know, replied to plenty of people that I respect in the music and poetry world. And I don't, when I do that, I'm trying to show some appreciation for what they're doing or what they're tweeting or, you know, just whatever. Like, I don't expect them to follow me back. And if they do, I'm psyched. Then I'll, you know, be like, oh, that's great. I don't know. I just don't see Twitter needing to be so reciprocal just out of some kind of politeness. Like,
yeah, and that's not how the platform was designed. And I think that, you know, Twitter has so many recommendation little things they've got popping up now. Like you follow somebody and it recommends a couple other people. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, I'll follow that person, that person, that person. They seem like they talk about, you know, related subjects or whatever, similar professions listed or keywords that relate. And so, you know, just because someone follows you doesn't mean that they should, you should feel obligated. But I agree with your assessment, Chris. If you're on Twitter and you are a band and you open up a profile and the first thing you do is just start following thousands of people, you're probably doing it wrong. I'm not going to say that's going to be ineffective 100% of the time. There might be that one sale that comes very randomly because you followed half the world and but didn't care about them. I think success always comes when you take advantage of the platform itself. Twitter, you know, some social media guys will say that, hey, this percent of your content should be you posting original stuff. This percent of content should be you posting other people's stuff. And this percent should be you retweeting other people's stuff. I don't get down into the like, yes, you should go by these percentage rules. But I think just the idea, those like those three buckets, that's if you do those three things on Twitter, you are a good member of the community and people will want to engage with you. If you're just telling people to buy your music, you are not using the platform to its fullest.
Well, yeah. And if you think about that word engagement, there's no way that you can wake up in the morning and open Twitter and engage with 3,000 people you follow. So, you know, most of it's going to be BS anyway. So just better to keep it compact, I think, and energetic in that small, manageable way at first.
Yeah, and for me, it's been, you know, something I've been wondering myself. Should I follow a ton more people? Because I actually like opening the Twitter feed and seeing what people are saying. And it's kind of like, you know, you can tell when some world event's trending, or, you know, a lot of people I follow are musicians. And so it's like I kind of just see what people are talking about. And I felt like if I just started following like 30, 40, 50,000 people, that element might be lost. But you know, anyway, that's my opinions. That's my advice. I don't think it's bad to go randomly follow people. I think when you start a Twitter account, you have nothing. So you got to follow somebody and that's how you start something. But I think you should take it, like build a foundation, show that you're going to interact and use the platform and then go from there.
Yeah. The last thing I would say is some of the most interesting people that I follow, that I consistently favorite or retweet their stuff, when I go to their actual page and look at their numbers, they're maybe following 40 people and they maybe have like 50 or 60 followers. It's tiny, tiny in terms of Twitter communities, but they're doing something that I find really special. So I think that's what's most important about Twitter.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the call, Mike. I hope that helps. And if you have a question or a comment and want to get it to us to answer on the podcast, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209. That's 360-524-2209. Or you can email us podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And I'm Kay Bruner on Twitter, the letter K, and then my last name. And Chris, you're just at Chris Robley.
Yep.
And, you know, we're always willing to ask or answer questions there. You can also tweet at CD Baby, but other folks monitor that most of the time. I just ran out of everything to say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, you just had a complete Zen moment.
That's
you were,
right.
You were totally emptied of all yearning and...
That's right. It's time to start my day off, my day off that I worked half the morning for. I am actually really excited about at the conference, us doing that live podcast. When originally we were talking about, you know, Chris and I had a session planned together and an idea, and I said, you know what? It's going to be the last session of the day. If we do this stiff kind of presentation, we're going to lose everybody. They're going to be like, I'm hungry, I'm bored, I'm tired, I've been here all day. So I said, let's make it a live podcast, very interactive. We're going to talk about mistakes leading up to releasing an album. We're going to get the audience involved as best we can, people sharing stories. And so I think it'll be fun, and we'll be able to record it with no problems, and it'll be a first for this podcast. So
So come to the conference and bring your ghost stories.
Yeah, so I do hope to see everybody in Chicago. DIY Musician Con, C-O-N, con.com, and get info. Ticket prices go back up to $99 on September 16th. So get your tickets before that happens and save some money. And any final thoughts, Chris?
Have a great vacation.
Yeah, where are you headed? I didn't know where you're going.
I'm headed to a small town on the coast of Maine, where a friend has a really beautiful house on the coast, and she's letting us borrow it. So I plan to basically just be there and do nothing.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
That sounds like fun. All right. Well, you enjoy yourself, and we'll catch everyone later.
All right. See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.